Almighty God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, please open your heart and your wisdom toward us. Please be with us today as we learn more about you, as we study your word, understand where you're coming from and where you want us to go. Please direct our path and our hearts and our minds toward you. We ask your guidance and your understanding in the name of your son, Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen. We are in 1 Samuel chapter 25 today. Those of you who can't, we have a little nice map up here. We're going to continue on with the story of David. Now, this is an excursion out of the story which David and Saul are fighting, or not fighting, sorry, finding one another as far as Saul trying to capture him. There's a moment in time which is a side note, a separate story that happens amongst this whole searching process between Saul and David. So, 1 Samuel chapter 25.
Then Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him, and buried him at his home in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Now there was a man in Naon whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife, Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance, but the man was harsh and evil in his doings. He was of the house of Caleb. When David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, 'Peace be to you, peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. Now I have heard that you have shearers. Your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them all the while they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants and to your son David.' So when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all the words in the name of David and waited. Then Nabal answered David's servants and said, 'Who is David and who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men when I do not know where they are from?' So David's young men turned on their heels and went back, and they came and told him all these words. Then David said to his men, 'Every man gird on his sword.' So every man girded on his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with the supplies. Now one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, 'Look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them. But the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. They were a wall to us both by night and day, all the time we were with them keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, no one consider what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him.' Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 sehahs of roasted grain, and 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on donkeys. And she said to her servants, 'Go on before me, see, I am coming after you.' But she did not tell her husband Nabal. So it was, as she rode on the donkey, that she went down under cover of the hill. And there were David and his men coming down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, 'Surely in vain I have protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belongs to him. And he has repaid me evil for good. May God do so and more also to the enemies of David, if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light. Now when Abigail saw David, she dismounted quickly from the donkey, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. So she fell at his feet and said, "On me, my lord, on me let this iniquity be, and please let your maidservant speak in your ears, and hear the words of your maidservant. Please let not my lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young men of my lord who you sent. Now, therefore, my lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then, let your enemies and those who seek harm for my lord be as Nabal. And now this present which your maidservant has brought to my lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my lord. Please forgive the trespass of your maidservant, for the Lord will certainly make for my lord an enduring house. Because my lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. And yet, as a man has ridden to pursue you and seek your life, but the life of my lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God, and the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the pocket of a sling. And it shall come to pass, when the Lord has done for my lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you, and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you, nor offense of heart to my lord, either that you have shed blood without cause, or that my lord has avenged himself. But when the Lord has dealt well with my lord, then remember your maidservant." Then David said to Abigail, "Blessed is the Lord God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, and blessed are you, because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand. For indeed, as the Lord God of Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, surely by morning light no males would have been left to Nabal." So David received her hand, what she had brought him, and said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respect your person." Now Abigail went to Nabal, and there he was, holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king, and Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. Therefore she told him nothing, little or much, until morning light. So it was in the morning, when the wine had gone from Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became like a stone. And it happened, after about 10 days, that the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. So when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord, who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and has kept his servant from evil. For the Lord has returned the wickedness of Nabal on his own head." And David sent and proposed to Abigail to take her as his wife. When the servants of David had come to Abigail at Carmel, they spoke to her, saying, "David sent us to you to ask you to become his wife." Then she arose, bowed her face to the earth, and said, "Here is your maidservant, a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my lord." So Abigail rose in haste and rode on a donkey, attended by 5 of her maidens, and she followed the messengers of David and became his wife. David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and so both of them were his wives. But Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who was from Galim.
Thank you, David. That was 1 Samuel chapter 25. Any questions or comments regarding this particular chapter? Yes, Sharon.
Well, Abigail's one of my favorite women in the Bible.
Yes.
I mean, totally one of my favorite. But she was obviously a prophet, or prophetess, if you want to say that, knowing exactly what God was going to do for not only David, but to her husband. And she kind of told David that when that happens to her husband, she would like to be his wife. You know?
Essentially, that's exactly what she said. You're right. She is a prophetess. She's one of the few prophetesses recorded in the Bible. Because, yes, she prophesied the death of Nabal, which we're going to get to. She also prophesied the death of Saul in this as well. Very wise individual. Not only was she able to obviously dissuade David from doing something which was unholy, ungodly, by killing a man, you don't get to be killed for being a Scrooge. That's not a death penalty. So it doesn't say, thou shalt give whatever somebody asks of you, and if you don't, you die. Well, that doesn't work that way. No law says that. Now, had David actually been, in fact, king, there have been other laws that would have applied. But Nabal knew full well that David was not king. Any other comments or questions? I think Susan had your hand up first.
Well, mine's a little bit facetious, Daniel, but I noticed David had a very politically polite version of the Word of God. Twice,
yes.
Urinating against the wall or pissing against the wall.
That is the proper,
was omitted.
Yes, that is the proper Hebrew translation is, leave no one who pees against the wall alive. That's the proper translation. That's exactly what David said. Those are the words. Now, yeah, exactly. Now, of course, it's a euphemism, obviously, designed for all males. But it's males, not only human, but also non-human males. That includes animals, that includes anything that's male. Kill them all. That's the terminology. Would Abigail, as Nabal's wife, been included amongst the dead? No. Did she pee against the wall? No. Clearly, he was not referring to females. He was referring to, obviously, Nabal and all of his male servants included. So the servant, who of course comes to Abigail and says, hey, our boss, this is what's happened, and tells the story, it's in that servant's best interest to stop David because that servant would be amongst the dead. Any other comments or questions?
Why do they have more than one wife?
More than one wife. Ah. As it is discussed, as the law it states, as far as it's designed, or God had designed it for one male, one female, that's the way he set it up. Well, as you or everybody else is fully aware, cultures have a tendency to do what they want to do. All right, name a culture that doesn't. That's if a culture says XYZ behavior is acceptable, then guess what? That becomes acceptable. Was God pleased that David had multiple wives? No, there's no indication of that. Was God pleased that Solomon had so many wives? No, quite the opposite. Was God pleased that Jacob had so many wives? No, there's no indication of that. There's no indication that God was pleased by any act of having more than one wife. There is indication that God's pleased when someone has one wife. But there's only a few of those instances recorded. Yes?
There's actually quite a bit of evidence that the trouble that came from more than one wife.
Yes. Exactly.
There's evidence that...
Yes. It is quite the opposite. Now, granted, this is a culture that accepted it at the time. It clearly does not accept it now, but at the time it did accept it.
Even when Daniel looked down on Bathsheba. David looked down on Bathsheba and then sent her husband to the front lines to be killed. Nathan came to him,
mm-hmm.
and gave him that parable, and then told him in so many words, if you would have wanted such and such, I would have given you anything else you wanted, but besides take this little person's only ewe lamb. You took mm-hmm. his only wife.
He said, and you have plenty.
And you had plenty. If you would have wanted some more, I would have given it to you. But to do that wickedness that he did was more grievous than, I guess, wanting just another woman. But there are various examples throughout Scripture where God makes seemingly
contradictory.
Some exceptions.
Well, note in that story, Nathan does not tell David what would have happened to his current wives.
Right.
There's no indication, oh, you want another wife? Okay. We'll remove all these. Here's a new one. There's no indication that God would not have done that. So it's quite easily could have. I mean, how many of us know people who have been widows or widowers? It happens. That's life. That's existence. So having more than one wife, there's no indication God said please at the same time. Many people have more than one wife over their lifetime. That's not an aberration of the Torah. Yes, Anne.
Notice the last two verses in this chapter. David took another woman besides Abigail. I always thought, I didn't realize he took a second wife the same time.
Yep.
And then verse 44, I think Michal must have gone back to her daddy and said, look, my husband has taken two more wives. What can you do for me, daddy?
Not exactly. What most things would have happened.
Okay.
For her reaction was slightly different. And I don't know if you recall, but when David first flees from Saul, Saul has his men outside David's house, which of course Michal lives there. Both David and her live there. She sneaks him out the window, and of course when Saul asks her what happened, and she says, well, David threatened to kill me. That was her lie to Saul. Well, if you threaten to kill your wife, guess what? You no longer have a wife, especially when she happens to be the king's daughter. That's a whole other area. So he simply said, okay, you're no longer married. Let's give you somebody else. So that's most likely what would have occurred. Now, it doesn't specify that he gave her away at this moment or gave her away at some other previous time. It doesn't make any difference. The point is that she was no longer his wife as far as Saul was concerned. Whether or not Palti or Patiel, which he's mentioned later, used her as a wife, it's been an indication that he did not, but that's a separate issue. Any other questions or comments regarding that? Yes. Oh, my. Does that sound better? Okay. Let's just go through this, if you don't mind. First verse, tradition. Samuel dies, and all of Israel gathers to eulogize him or mourn him, and they bury him at his home in Ramah. Was David and Saul at his funeral?
No.
Not likely. Tradition says they must have been there because it was all of Israel. That's tradition, because the chance of both of them burying the hatchet for a day is pretty darn slim. Most likely, Saul probably would have been at his funeral. David most likely would not have been able to attend. Because it says David arose and descended to the wilderness of Paran. Where was David before he went to the wilderness of Paran? Well, the previous chapter places him in En-Gedi, which is a small town. Actually, I didn't have a marked little map here. Right about there, a little mark here. Find a marker somewhere. The En-Gedi was the natural stronghold or natural cave areas. It was very difficult for anybody to penetrate. No military armies walk through there because it was designed for goats. That's what goats lived there. That was their nature. Very natural place for them to live. That was where the cave and everything else happens there. Oh, a few other things happened as well. So he goes from there and goes to Willis Paran. Willis of Paran is down south. It includes part of Jordan, part of a little bit of Israel, and down into the Saudi Arabian area. If you choose to go online and search for the wilderness of Paran, it will not locate it there. It will locate the mountain of Paran there and the plain of Paran there, but it will locate the wilderness of Paran in the Sinai Peninsula. Why is that? There's a small hand way back there if you can try to catch it. Yell it out quickly, Ellie.
Because they've got the wrong place for Mount Sinai.
Correct. As you have to write, Wilderness Paran is located in Mount Sinai, as they claim, because that's where the field children of Israel dwelt. So that's where Mount Sinai is. It's in the wilderness of Paran. So they have to place it in Mount Sinai, because that's what they say the traditional mountain location is. But Mount Paran is over in Jordan. If you look at a map, the country of Jordan does not border even close to the Sinai Peninsula. It's not there. the wilderness itself that includes the Mount of Paran. By the way, it's called now it's called Mount Jael Rum is its current modern name. It's the highest mountain in all of Jordan. It includes a wilderness area or a mountainous terrain area that's independent of the Sinai Peninsula. Just a minor detail, but that's where David went. Why would he go there? Who's going to find him? Exactly. It's outside of Saul's territory. Now, granted, David knows he made a deal. Okay, Saul, I had your robe. You indicated I would be king. We made an agreement. You wouldn't come and get me anymore. Does David trust him? No. Why would he not trust him? Look how many times Saul has broken that trust. He knows full well. That's great. Saul went back home, but David went down to someplace safe. Moab's territory. Where was David's mother and father? The king of Moab is supposed to have them at this point in time. He had control of them or ownership or protection of them. So, and also, David being part Moabite from his great ancestress Ruth, it'd be a natural place to hide. Outside of Saul's territory, still within reaching of Israel as need be when word comes if he's needed help. This is a great place to be. So that's where he's hanging out. Now, of course, then we hear the story of Nabal. Now, I mentioned when we first started, just before we started to read this, that this is a story that happens during the time which Saul and David are fighting one another, or trying to hunt each other down. Well, Saul's trying to hunt him down, and David, of course, is fleeing. We don't know when this occurred, whether it occurred, right after chapter 24, or how much time elapsed. It's not recorded. It's an occurrence that once happened. It appears we know the time of year it happened, but we don't know what year it happened to have occurred. Nabal. Now you notice by the little map here, it says Maon and Carmel. Do we know where Mount Carmel is? North. It's way up here. This little squiggly spot on my little map here, way up here. That's Mount Carmel. Note where Mount Carmel is and the city of Carmel. Are they the same place? Not even close. Because I pointed that out because it threw me when it started recording that Carmel... David never went that far north. This doesn't make any sense. How could this be? He can't have men traveling all the way through the territory of Mount Carmel, because it wasn't. So I had to do a little bit of hunting and found out that Carmel is a small town about a mile and a half outside of Maon. So Nabal's from Maon. Of course, his business is in Carmel. So all of his sheep and shepherds and whatnot, they're traveling in this territory, fattening up the calves and fattening all up, right? Where David's men are all at. Well, during this time, they were in En-Gedi, in that area. So naturally, they're going to be around the same place where the shepherds are. Now, David, of course, he has 600 men to feed. Now, think about that for a minute. These men, who they threw their hat in and they followed David, did they have independent means? No, it actually specifically states these men had debts. They disagreed with the king or the leadership. They had families which they had to leave behind. Yeah, this is unwanted. Are they all wealthy? So who feeds them? David's got to feed them. Now, normally, when you're king and you have to feed an army, what do? Well, you tax the people. Exactly. Look at your annual tax or your weekly tax or your paycheck tax. It all comes out of it. Does David get to tax the people? No. Yeah, exactly. He's not there yet. But he still has 600 mouths to feed. How does David feed them?
Pressure.
He has some pressure. He has some asking, begging, needs. He travels from place to place. Don't stay too long. You'll be unwelcome. This town, we've used up its resources. Let's find a new place to go. We'll hang out over here for a while. Note, he traveled between Ziph, which is, I didn't mark it here, but south of Hebron. He traveled through Hebron. He traveled the whole area, able to support these 600 men who had virtually no real means of their own. Now, was David a poor man? Not likely, but most of his assets would be stuck at home because he's on the run. Yes.
What he did with Nabal almost sounds like extortion, though.
Yes, it does.
pay for protection.
Yep. And we're going to talk about that. Okay, so let's move on. We're going to get to that point as we go along. So who is the Baal? Well, the Baal, of course, as it points out here, it's recorded two different ways. It depends on which version of the Bible you happen recorded. One says he's a descendant of Caleb. How many of you say that? Mine says descendant of Caleb. Yes. This is verse 3. It says, the man's name was Nabal. His wife was Abigail. She was intelligent and beautiful. The man was difficult, and even though he was a descendant of Caleb. Is there anything other recorded other than descendant of Caleb? Kelebite, it's a race.
Yeah, the one I have says, the name of the man was Nabal, the name of the wife Abigail, and his wife was good and understanding and very beautiful in appearance. The man was surly and mean in his practices, and the man was dog-like.
Yeah, dog-like. Which one's correct? Descendant of Caleb or dog-like? What is Caleb? Dog. That's the Hebrew word for dog. Caleb, no, remember Caleb, but Joshua and Caleb, when they went through this territory and they were part of the spies? He was a man. His name means dog. His parents wake up one morning, hey, look, we have a son, we'll call him a dog. No, not likely. Now, let's look back there, though. What does the Hebrew word Caleb actually mean? Well, yeah, it's dog, but the actual word that they use for dog means unconditional loving. How many of us have owned a dog that loves you no matter what you do to it?
Loyal.
Very, very loyal. So, now let's ask the same question again. So, when Caleb's parents woke up, oh look, it's a son, what should we call him? Now Caleb doesn't sound so bad. A loving child. Unconditionally loving child, very loyal child. Okay, it can be either way. That's fair. That's a fair way of discussing it. Now, was Nabal a biological descendant of Caleb, or was he a dog? I'm not referring to dog in appearance. I'm referring to dog in action. Yeah, when a dog gets food, you throw a scrap of meat, for example, to a dog. How willing is it to share? I have yet to meet a dog that's willingly able and happy to share. Now, some will, I'm sure, if you train them right. The vast majority, I don't think so. It's mine. That's indicative of Nabal's actions, isn't it? So the reason I point this out, because Nabal's parents apparently decided to name him Nabal. What is Nabal in Hebrew? A fool. What were his parents thinking? Honestly. Think about it better. Would they have normally... Who names their son a fool, an idiot? Unless he is one. Now, it's possible that his parents didn't name him that, but yet he earned that name, became that name. A common euphemism you call... Well, I won't go to too many euphemisms, but you call people a lot of different things. Tiny or calling... some, just nicknames. It's possible that that is his actual name, or that it was a nickname, not his God or parent-given name. So, was he descendant of Caleb? Probably. Why do I say probably? Well, because he lived in the territory that Caleb owned. Caleb, his ancestor, was given all of Hebron and all the surrounding cities, which, guess what, included part of what is now the territory of Carmel and Maon. So was he a descendant of actual the Caleb? Most likely. Is it a play on words? Yeah, most likely. He was a dog-like person. He was very mind orientated. Since David used the term, he who pisses on a wall, referring to all males, and David being an artist in word use, is a high probability, by the way, he was the one who would have written this portion of 1 Samuel, is there a high probability David would have named Nabal. And David would have called him what he called him, because it meant something, and David was trying to dig at him. Well, yeah, most likely, because that's what David would have done. It's nothing evil about it, it's just what he did. Yes, Temi.
Well, if this is the name that David gives this man, could it be that David was giving this man at least a small degree of anonymity if that was a name that nobody else knew him by, but David himself, because that's the name David gave him because he didn't like him very much?
You could say that. It's possible that David was trying to protect him just a little bit as far as his identity. I won't say he was or wasn't, but it is quite interesting. Although Abigail seems to refer to her as, this is the name which everybody calls him. So I don't know if David assigned him the name or just knew about it, because he would have known the territory, known his shepherds who David was protecting, and they said, oh, yeah, our boss, the fool. Okay, let's move on. So extortion, as it was pointed out earlier by Hector, is this extortion? Now, of course, David comes to him. This is during the celebration. This is verse 8. It points out to your celebration. It's your harvest time. You're harvesting the sheep. Wool is being cut up, and you're celebrating. You have, was it 2,000 or 3,000 sheep? I forgot. It's crud. It's written here somewhere. And 1,000 goats. Yeah, I knew it was something like that. That's a lot of animals. A lot of animals that Nabal owns and takes care of. Had David's men not been there, would he have had so many? See, that's David's argument. Probably not. David was a shepherd, right? We all remember that story. Lions, bears, people who choose to steal. Shepherds have to fight them all off. Nabal's men hung around David's men for a reason. Now, if I'm a shepherd and my job is to protect sheep, am I going to hang around people who are stealing from me? I'm going to skip town pretty quick. I'm going to hang out with people who will protect me. And the shepherds knew. These men were protected. They did not take anything. Didn't extract anything from us. Did protect us. Kept us safe. Did everything we were supposed to do. So Nabal had so much. How much would he have had otherwise? There's no evidence, no proof. He would have had only 2,000 sheep. Well, okay, that'd be a problem. Go ahead, Susan.
I'm not wondering if there's something going on. It says that Nabal was very great.
Yes.
That at En-Gedi, there is a huge wadi. I've walked up it.
Mm-hmm.
It is the only source of fresh water.
In the entire area.
Hundreds of miles around. So if you have Nabal and it's full of waterfalls and grass, so you've got a perfect place to come and water your sheep and your goats, you've got grass going, you could grow things there. It's sort of like, it's such a shock because the rest of the area is so rocky and void of anything. And then this is very lush and verdant. I'm not wondering if Nabal had kind of like control over the water rights, the watering and what food was growing around there. So David, it's basically the only source for them to get food out there.
You're absolutely right. That's actually what we'd like to talk about, which we don't talk to just yet, but I'll go ahead and do it now. Jewish tradition, what makes you great?
Money,
animal, property, wealth, land. That's tradition. Was Nabal all those things? Yes. Was David any of those things? Not yet. He lost pretty much all of it. He's going to be. Biblical tradition. Who was great?
Prophets.
Right. All the prophets. David himself was classified as great. Yes, for different reasons. So Nabal is a straight, direct contrast of what man calls great, and by the way, Saul is included in Nabal's category, versus what the Bible calls great. He classified as a great man. That doesn't mean that he was a good man. That doesn't mean he was a fair man. Exactly. There is a reason in Jewish tradition, of course, I'm going outside the Bible here, why it says Nabal was from Maon, but his business was in Carmel. Strictly tradition, you don't have to buy this at all. You can say it's hogwash. It's your business. The reason being, traditionally given, is that when the people of Carmel come and say, Nabal, please give a small amount. You have so much. He says, but I've already given people of Maon. The people of Maon come to him and say, Nabal, please give, you have so much. My business is in Carmel. I've already given people in Carmel. Hence his name, Nabal. Did David name him Nabal? Possibly not likely. More than likely, the people of whom around him and the people of the town named him Nabal. Why would they name him? Because he's a greedy man that wouldn't share anything.
Fool.
Exactly. He was a fool.
Well, he's calling
yes.
You won't share anything.
So there's a good probability that the ball did operate, control, or have a lot of power in that region, and he was unwilling to help or assist anybody else. Yes, Ellie.
And after he had his stroke, he had 10 days to lay there and think about his ways before he died.
Very true, very true. He had time to consider it and realize. Yep. Highly likely. The reason I point it out, it does point out this is a celebration or a feast day. Now, some argue it's a feast day just for Nabal. But would David all the way down the wilderness of Paran know about it? Highly unlikely. Nabal and the people around here would have known, but nobody would have told David. It's a non-issue. Oh, well, that he happened to choose, you know, that Tuesday to shear his sheep. Okay. And since it takes you 4 days to find out about it, it doesn't matter. But if David knew it was a holy day and knew what was happening at that time, hence why you would ask for assistance as a poor person, which at this point David and Israel are poor. You would arrive and say, please give what you can. He wasn't saying, give me this amount. No, what you can spare. It was not an unholy act that David asked. Because the time of year would have been traditional to give a small amount to the poor. And David's men, being runaways and trying to find and struggling to scrape their way through life, they are poor. They have nothing. So it would not be necessarily extortion. Now, could it be extortion? One can argue that. I'm not going to say otherwise. No. But it may not. No, it's a good point. Because it's been many people argue this seems extortion. Okay, so it's a celebration, it's harvest time. He has plenty. There will be no significant impact. Now, granted, when Abigail finally gives him food, how much did he give? Well, 5 lambs, I think it is. Out of 3,000, you think he could spare 5? And David was placated with that. He wasn't asking for a lot. A little bit. That's pretty small. But that's okay. What is Nabal's response to David's men? Now, this is the key. Because you have to ask yourself, why would God kill Nabal? What is it that God hated about this man and said he should die for this? Was it strictly because he said, no, I'm not going to share my stuff? Not likely. Yes, Hank.
Was it because he denied knowledge of son of Jesse, David, the blessing that was known to be on him?
That's my belief. My personal belief is that. Because Abigail seems to have known all the details about David. And if Abigail knew the details, there's a high chance everybody else in the region knew the details of what was going on. That would include, most likely, Nabal would know the details of who David actually was.
Unless God had given Abigail some special insight into what was going on when the servant came to her and said, hey, laid it all out for her about what was going on.
It's
so
possible.
God could have given Abigail a special insight. It's like, the man that this lad is telling you about is not just any old vagabond. There's a reason he's here. And God could have very well told her why he was there and who he was and what he plans he had for David.
That's possible. But Nabal's response leads me to think that you could be right. I'm not saying you're wrong. Just as possible. But Nabal's response points out, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? But who are you to ask for anything? Essentially, what he's saying. You're a nobody. It points out that rebellious servants have increased. What's Nabal telling David when he says that statement? You're a rebel. You belong to Saul. You are on your own. You don't belong. You shouldn't be this. You are rebelling against your owner, your master. That's Nabal telling him. Now, to me personally, my personal opinion, that tells me that Nabal knows exactly who David is and everything about him as far as why he's going, fleeing Saul. Because, no, of course, a servant doesn't flee his master unless the servant believes he's being humiliated, attacked, punished unfairly or unjustly. That's pretty much standard across, you know, humanity. If you're being treated very well, you usually don't abandon your master. So I think Nabal knows that David's being treated very, very poorly. How poorly, it's hard to say. But it's personal opinion, though. It's my personal opinion. Yes, Bill.
David refused to kill Saul because he said, I won't lift a hand against God's anointed.
Anointed, right.
And Nabal, he's not so much lifting the hand, but he's refusing to help God's anointed.
He did. Now, that's if Nabal for sure knew that David was anointed. Now, I'm arguing he probably knew something about that. I mean, all the details, but something that Nabal, that David was anointed. In which case, yeah, Nabal raised his hand against him. Is that an offense that God would kill for?
What's that?
Is that an offense that God would kill for? To raise your hand against his anointed? Yeah. Well, yeah, he did it to a lot of people. What's the difference? Why would not Nabal be included? So, my personal opinion, was God upset for Nabal for saying no, or because of how he treated David? My personal opinion, because of how he treated David. Yes, Hank.
Specifically because he withheld from God's anointed. You know, the whole statement, I do not know who the son of Jesse is.
Yeah. The fact that he knows he's the son of Jesse.
It's just, you know, clear denying.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a classic hierarchical, you know, it's like, oh, I know nothing of poor people.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know them, you don't have to help them.
You're nobody. Yes, Kathy.
It puts me in mind of Judah's two oldest sons who God killed. And so it could also be in protection of Abigail.
That's possible.
Because
I hadn't thought about that.
He was that evil, once she told him what she had done for David, he may have done her wrong.
That's a good possibility. I didn't think about that. He may have actually been protecting Abigail. That's a good point. Yes, Susan.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that in the Hebrew, there's kind of a wordplay going on here. Because he says, who is the son of Jesse? The next minute he says, shall I take my bread, my water, my flesh? Jesse means I possess.
Yes.
So there's a real, so the statement is, if Jesse possesses, right? If it means
right.
I possess. No, but mm-hmm. Nabal is actually saying, I
am the
possess.
Possessor. Yes, I am the possessor. Yeah. Yes. But it tells you how intelligent I think Nabal actually was. And he wasn't, although he's called, he wasn't a fool like an idiot.
Yeah.
He was a fool that he was, in my personal opinion, he didn't trust or fear God.
Yeah.
He was not a fear of God or David, for that matter. Yes, Billy
talk,
David.
Talk about play on words. Caleb means dog, right?
Yes.
And then they liken Nabal to
a dog.
And doesn't the Jewish word dog mean fish?
that's cheating. Oh, pun going on there. Oh, dogs like to piss on the wall. That includes it. There's a lot of play on words going on in this particular story. Yes,
What about the scripture that says, I will curse those that curse you, and I will bless those that bless you? And if Nabal, in a sense, cursed David and his men and not provided for them, that is
a very good point. And that's why I want to talk about what Abigail just said to him. Now, of course, the servant comes to Abigail, which I already mentioned before, the servant is most likely male. It is his best interest to tell Abigail, stop this, because David's going to kill all males, that includes me. We've got to fix this now, and of course, Nabal is not somebody you can talk to. Please help. She, of course, hears this, oh, okay, I understand. She gets all this food ready. No, most likely it was a peace trumpet because of what she sent. Fig cakes, raisin clusters, which she already had available and ready to go. There's a high probability that is the feast day or near to it. Can't swear to it, but high probability. Sheep were already ready to be eaten. some things were already ready to go. So there's a good chance that's what was going on, or at the time of year. She sends all these things, of course, before her. She takes her lead from Jacob. Remember Jacob and Esau? He sends all the stuff before him as gifts to placate the adversary. Now, of course, point out that she descended down a mountain. Well, it's because David's going up to the side. They didn't see each other coming. They actually ran across each other in the road. Oh, look. Oh, hey. Hi. That kind of thing. The mountain range, the area is not exactly easily seen through. She comes and she says, okay, stop it. Let's see, verse 22. Oh, well, I'll skip that. That was the dog pissing on the wall thing. Okay, let's go past that one. So, verse 23. When Abigail saw David, she hurried down, dismounted, fell upon her face, prostrated, did all the normal, paying homage to. And this is where she shows her prophecy. very intelligent lady. Let my lord not set his heart against this base man, against the ball, for as the name implies, his name is revulsion, or a fool is his trait. And I, your maidservant, did not see my lord's attendants whom you sent. Meaning that David's men didn't go to see Abigail, they saw Nabal instead. Now, my lord, as the Lord lives, by your life, as the Lord has prevented you from coming to bloodshed, meaning you have not been killed. And it's only by the God's grace that was the case. She knows the story of David. She knows how good of a man he is and what things he has gotten out of that defies what would have known to be expected. And from your own hand avenging you, may all your enemies and those who wish evil upon my lord be like Nabal. Prevented you from coming to bloodshed, and may your preventing your own hand from avenging you. Don't do this yourself, David. Stop your own hand. Now, this smacks of the exact same words, almost, that David said to his own men. The previous chapter. And, of course, the following chapter. My hand will not be against him. He says it to Saul, my hand will not be against you. Because God will take care of you. Well, in this case, she's telling him, giving his own advice. May your not hand be against the ball. Let God take care of him. Let God do this. Yes, Ellie.
That's really hard to do, and that is probably one of the marks of why God said about David, I have found David, and he has a heart like me. Because David would actually wait for God to do it. That's huge.
That is. That's not an easy thing for anybody to do. Most of us, I know I have a hard time waiting. I'm a very impatient person. I always have been and probably always will be. For waiting for something to happen, it could have taken years. No one knows. It may never have happened. But David was willing to wait. But this other statement that Abigail also adds in here. May all your enemies and those who wish evil upon my lord be like Nabal. And of course, she refers to how much but she gave, and continues on. Verse 29, she lists one of David's enemies. A man has risen up to pursue you and seek your life. May my lord's soul be bound up in the bottle of life with the Lord, your God. And may you hurl away the soul of your enemies as one shoots a stone from a slingshot. So she stated two verses earlier. This is the same set, it's the same paragraph. May all your enemies be like the ball, a fool, an idiot. By the way, there's a man who's chasing you. He is an idiot. He is one of your enemies. She's calling the king, Saul, not by name, because that would be a death warrant, calling Saul and the ball. He's a fool. That's a way of appeasing the heart of the man who might want to kill you. The enemy that is your enemy is, in fact, a rotten scoundrel, just like my husband is. But her statements, may his soul be thrown like that of a slingshot. The Baal's soul dies, the following chapter, guess what happens? Saul dies. That's why she's called a prophetess. That she prophesied the death of Saul. And, of course, her own husband. Which is a minor thing. Yeah, he gets her husband. That's the Saul is more important. That she prophesies that the Saul. She's called a prophetess because that's in her statement she is declaring that may Saul die in the same fashion, the fact that his soul be cast away as one throws away a stone of no value. Discard it and you don't go bother to try to fetch it again. Who gets to throw away souls? Only God. Now see, she's saying because when the slingshot hurls a stone, as just mentioned, does the slinger go find it? Of course not. He grabs another stone. So she's saying, may your enemies' souls be thrown like that stone. What's she saying? May the one who throws the stone throw his soul and throw all your enemies' souls, and may he never go find them again. There's a permanent death, is what she's declaring, for Nabal, and of course for Saul as well. Now, granted, did Saul deserve a permanent death? Well, considering the fact he wiped out a huge chunk of the priesthood on a whim, yeah, I'd probably say he's probably going to be a permanent death, most likely. Because he doesn't think he is completely evil, by all definitions. I mean, even you know, most enemies of Israel didn't even do that. Most. And may it be, verse 30, the Lord performs for my Lord all the benefits of which he has spoken regarding you, which we don't know how much of the information she knows regarding what was spoken of regarding David, and appoints you leader over Israel. She doesn't use the word king, she uses the word leader. May this, meaning this execution of the ball and all the servants, not be a stumbling block or a moral hindrance for my Lord to have shed innocent blood, for my Lord to have avenged himself. David was willing to kill all of Nabal's servants. Were Nabal's servants on David's side?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, at least the one that went to Abigail certainly was. And that one would have been killed. Would he have been an innocent life? Well, yes. And would David have cared? Not at the time, he wouldn't have. He would have allowed him to die. For that was David's declaration. She's actually preventing him, not from killing so much Nabal, who cares, but all of Nabal's men. All the people that Nabal would say, servants, we go to war. And all the servants had to say, yes, sir, grab a sword and go fight and be killed. She's protecting all of them, too. In my opinion, that's the innocent blood that she's referring to, not Nabal's innocent blood. I don't believe he was innocent of anything. And I don't think she thinks he's innocent of anything. I think it's the servants she knows that are innocent of this, because they're the ones on David's side. They agree that David deserves some small homage of anything, whatever Nabal was willing to afford. And of course, moral hindrance, as when you become leader, you don't want this on your record. It's not a good thing. Let this be on Saul's record, because all the things that he did, you don't want to be the same kind of king that Saul was. So she is called a prophetess. I think she's one of seven, I believe, in the Bible recorded that actually prophesied something in the future. And she's given credit for it. Let's see here. David's response. This is what David focuses on. Does he focus upon the food? No. Let's read this real quick. David said to Abigail, blessed is the Lord God of Israel who sent you this day to meet me, and blessed is your advice. Blessed are you for you have restrained me from coming to bloodshed and avenging myself upon my own hand. Was he upset with the possibility of killing good people? Well, sort of. He actually says, from coming to bloodshed but avenging myself by my own hand. It seems to be the biggest thing he got out of her response was, don't do this yourself, David. Let God do this. Not that, innocent bloodshed would have died. Oh, it may have tarnished my kingship. No. It was, don't avenge myself. That was the same advice he'd given his own men. No, not avenge. This is not for me to go against the anointed. I will not do this myself. Let God do it. He heard those words from Abigail. He heard, she knows something. She knows the same thing that I'm supposed to know. Don't do this yourself. This is God's category. This is his task to complete. Yes, David.
He's quickened in the spirit by that word. It just hit him like that.
It hit him.
And, you know, there's a worldly term, you know, a split second of sanity. You know, it just hit him.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have to say any more.
Yeah, that was it. Exactly. So truly as the Lord lives, who has been from harming you, you know, all of them, had you not hurt to come to meet me by morning's light, there would not have been remained a ball as much as one who pees against the wall. David accepts what she had given to him. So go in peace. I have taken your advice. I'll show grace upon you. Done. She averted this whole horrible thing. Now, of course, as Ellie pointed out a few moments ago, Nabal, when he finds out about it, his heart dies within him. Oh, yes, Anne.
Do you think the smell of the food coming might have influenced him? He was a little hungry by that time?
A hungry belly? That's possible. That's possible. Most likely, he had 400 men with him at that moment because 200 were remained with the supplies. I don't know how much food he brought with him. I don't know. He may have been pretty hungry. I mean, the travel from the wilderness of Paran up, that's quite a run. You may wear yourself out a little bit there. So that's possible. He takes her advice. Abigail, of course, returns. She doesn't mention to Nabal anything until his heart dies inside him. What does that mean? Possible stroke. Could be that he internally realized, I'm a dead man. Because this one thing is back to me. I think, my personal opinion, I think Nabal knew that David was likely going to become king one day. I think. If that was the case, the moment of sanity, when Nabal finds out, I think he realized what he has done, what Abigail averted for him. He knows he's going to be a dead man anyway, once David becomes king. Somebody have their hand up. Yes, Ellie.
He became like a stone.
Yeah.
He can't move. And he waits for 10 days before he dies.
Ten days later, Nabal dies. Abigail immediately becomes a widow. What happens to all of Nabal's property? Normally it would be hers, but it doesn't say how many children, if any, Nabal had. We don't know. Normally it would belong to her temporarily until she married somebody. It usually would be inside the tribe of Caleb, which she obviously did not marry inside the tribe of Caleb. So it may have been hers, it may have been her children, maybe Nabal had more than one wife. We don't know any of the details. Whatever happened to it, was that what David was really interested in? Clearly not, since he opted to obviously go get Abigail and bring her with whatever handmaids. And could David's 600 men have enough spare bodies to maintain and take care of 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats? He probably could have, but you couldn't go to war with them anymore, could you? One of David's men, what was probably the thing they do, they go to battle. Usually you leave your supplies at home with the bare minimum and go to battle. Well, if you have a lot of supplies, guess what? You start draining people away from your battle lines. So most likely, even if they did, by the outstretch, go to David, he wouldn't have held on to them. He would have to put them someplace else to take care of them, or give them to somebody else to take care of. I'm inclined to think they did not go to him. That's just my personal opinion. Of course, his servants come. They grab her. She's willing to go. He also, of course, marries Ahinoam, the Jezreelite. Now, one thing I mentioned before, it points out in verse 44 that Saul had given his daughter Michal, David's wife, to Palti, son of Laish Galim. I said the word that there's probability that Palti did not know Michal, as a husband knows a wife. Now, why would I say that? This is his name. Palti's name. Palti means rescued. Rescued, someone who's been rescued, or is rescued, has had that happen to him. Later on, a few chapters now, it calls him Paltiel, rescued by God. And Michal, of course, winds up going back to David as a wife later on, which would warrant a death penalty upon both her and Palti, or Paltiel, if that was the case. If he had actually known her. Now, Jewish tradition claims that he did not know her because he knew who David was. And he feared David more than he feared Saul. That's tradition. No proof one way or the other, but Paltiel isn't killed for it.
By who?
By anybody. He's not killed.
It was David.
But should be. No one could kill David or Bathsheba. In David's case, in Paltiel, David is the one who should kill him for it. That is the execution. You've committed adultery. That is the execution. The king can carry it out, or any of the priests who can carry it out. That would be the normal experience for both Michal and Paltiel, neither of which occurred. There's a probability that Paltiel knew that. Now, granted, we're not talking about years of them being man and wife, by the way, in case you're curious about that. We're talking months. Maybe a few weeks before Saul died, before Saul's killed. Yes, Ellie.
With the David and Bathsheba thing, the son's life was taken instead, the same way the Messiah's life was taken instead of ours. So it was a picture of now, but it required blood. And David was hoping it was his.
But it turned out to
it
not
wasn't,
be.
It was his son.
His son's instead. Yes, David.
Yeah,
Evidently, there was not a 40 days of mourning for Nabal.
No, there was no, apparently not 40 days of mourning. I'm not quite sure if a full day passed by. That's the biggest party they've ever had. Yes, Tammy.
That brings up an interesting point, because Jewish tradition says that when a woman becomes a widow, she's supposed to wait, 92 days before she remarries?
Correct.
To make sure she's not already pregnant with her husband's child.
Yes.
So she didn't even wait that long.
Clearly not. It doesn't specify whether it was a full day or not. It was like it was probably at least one, maybe 2 days, before David's men got back to there, but not sure about that.
She knew
yeah, she knew who David was. Yeah. She made a wise choice, so to speak. Of course, I forgot how many children she ends up having with him. I think it's 2 or 3 children, I think it is. So bottom line, why did God kill Nabal? Now, we asked this question, we have a mostly a reasonable answer. We came with 2 possibilities. Some are. Because of what he did, or because of what he said to David, or how he treated him?
Because of how he treated David and what he said to his men. He was insulting.
That's my inclination, too. So how he treated David and what he said, what he called David, which is basically, you rebellious servant, go back to Saul. You have no business, you are nobody, you do not deserve anything. In my personal opinion, because I think Nabal knew it. That's my personal opinion, though. Yes, any other comments? No.
Yes, if you notice, this whole spiritual book, this whole holy Bible that we have, the author, which is the greatest author known, the creator, everything within it is counsel. David always called the scripture his counsel. The testimonies are counsel. And so as we read about Nabal and this incident, this is just another example of counsel to us. It's counsel to us as you take a look at it and see, yeah, why does this happen to Nabal? Why did God allow that to happen to him? Why was God angry? All this, after we take a look at it, is counsel to us as individuals and maybe our own affairs.
Exactly. It tends to guide our own lives. I mean, if we see Nabal, it's, okay, this is how God treated this man and what this man did to an anointed one of God. Now, granted, we're not discussing everybody's anointed of God, but how this man treated not only David, but all men, apparently, and what God felt or thinks or acts upon that individual for such behavior. Yes, Hector.
It seems that Nabal blasphemed against the Spirit, and he was left desolate. He died.
That's a fair assessment. Because taking out not only David, but also considering all of his men and all the people who Nabal lived with, he treated them all pretty much the same, of the servants. You're of no value. That's a problem. I don't get to do that. If I did, well, may God correct me for it. It's not a lifestyle that we're supposed to be obeying. It's a lifestyle that Nabal obeyed, and he had to pay for it. Yes, Pat.
I believe he had to have known who David was, not only who David was, but that he was the anointed of God, because Abigail knew. And women usually... but they also, they lived a more sheltered, protected life. And if she knew, it had to be very common knowledge.
Most likely.
You would think so. I mean, Abigail, this was her husband. And that's another issue. How did Abigail, as a prophetess, a seer, not see who she was marrying to begin with? How did she deal with
her? Simple. Abigail, what does the name mean?
My father.
My father's joy, my father's happiness, my father's splendor. If Abigail's parents, and probably her father, named her that, who gave her away to marriage? Her parents. And being the father's splendor, his joy, would they have chosen a man that was wealthy or a man that was poor? Man that was wealthy. So Abigail, being her father's joy, obeying her father, being exactly what she was told to be, said, okay, father, this is my new husband, Nabal. May disliked him her whole life. But at the very end, at least she tried to protect him. She tried to protect him, though he did not deserve it. So she actually did something that was a joy to her father. She was honoring her husband. Any other questions or comments? I know I took you over time, as I always do. May God bless you for the rest of the wonderful Shabbat.